www.themouthmagazine.com.
Jazzy B, welcome to the Mouthcast.
Hi, Steve.
From Doll to Soul is a new BBC documentary, and also there are various dates with Soul to Soul coming up. So as we come towards the end of 2016, it's a really busy time for you.
Yes, it is, and I'm grateful. Been around long enough to be able to count your blessings. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about that documentary. It's the story of your rise during the 1980s and early 1990s. That was a decade of social and cultural change, a lot of unemployment and strikes and rioting. But also there was another side to that decade. There was a lot of partying, particularly towards the end of the decade.
I'd like to call it optimism.
Yeah, okay. But thinking about the events here in the UK this year and across the water in America very, very recently, do you feel there are perhaps parallels between the 1980s and the 2010s?
To be very fair with you, Steve, during that period of the early 80s or whatever, what was happening in the world politically with all the tricks and everything else of how we had come up, for want of a better word, I was oblivious to what was going on. That was maybe the backdrop towards what was happening, but I was always faced forward,
right,
meaning that we developed or we evolved through all this adversity. So that was always a part of life and a part of how I grew up in terms of reflecting on the actual time, what was happening in the social rise or the social unrest, as it were. Yeah, and I've got to be honest with you, during that period, we were totally oblivious. Obviously, looking back at it now, you couldn't have planned it any better, as it were, with everything else that was going on in the world. And I guess Soul to Soul's rise happened at a pretty important time in terms of social change around the world.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the band could have risen at any other time, really, because it did feel like an antidote to a lot of what was going on.
Absolutely. And yeah, what's been really interesting, yeah, in the journey so far, I've managed to visit some of those places that were under the cosh, as it were, during that period, to be told by people with the delight of your Facebooks and Twitter and stuff like that now, of how the world was for them during that period of time, and how much of a role, optimistically, that Soul to Soul played. So again, it just came at a really interesting time.
Well, making the documentary, was there much you learned? Because I imagine it's quite a strange experience, actually, going through the making of a film like that.
To be honest with you, it was really weird because we touched on a lot of things that I may, like I said, at that time, slightly oblivious to.
Yeah.
And in respect of what had gone on leading up to our situation or that romantic time, as it were. Yeah, it was quite emotional in some areas, particularly when I look back at the aspects of my parents coming over and obviously being my biggest inspiration, because I come from quite a large family. So imagining how they would have been able to manage during that time, yeah, was sort of heart-wrenching, because those things would be almost impossible to do. And the fact that my parents done such a great job in of raising us and giving us this opportunity as well, it's pretty incredible. Plus I spent some time in the Caribbean as well,
yeah,
reflecting on their life, which I'm not sure how much in the documentary there is of that, but I know we did a lot of recording, so let's see what comes out in that hour. But it was definitely an emotional experience for me, one that I was able to reflect and again sort of count my blessings, because yeah, there were probably a lot of things that happened that I was slightly oblivious to, sort of having tunnel vision at the time. So yeah, very interesting.
Interested that you mentioned your parents, actually, because I always wonder when I talk to people what the musical situation was like at home. That would be the first place that you encountered music, I would imagine.
Definitely. But, I mean, growing up in the house that I did as well, all my brothers were into music and my older sister. So regarding the sound system and me embarking on a career in it, I was actually surrounded by it and naturally driven through an educational, let's say, system. And the music always provided comfort and something I feel I obviously more understood in a very profound way, because along came technology that totally aided my situation to make music in the way that we currently know music today. And what was very interesting at that time, you're talking about in the early, mid-80s, it was quite a transitional time in terms of technology as well. And with things like wars ending and so on and so forth, we were then bombarded with a lot of technology, which, it really here we are today.
For second
nature, whereas at that time, it was probably more looked at something that wasn't very serious, a bit like how they took the bedroom DJ, I guess. But this is how powerful technology can be.
I mean, it's an amazing thing, just thinking about what you've just said, remembering back to the music technology of the 1980s. As a consumer, the big one, I suppose, would be the Walkman. That's what I remember. Just this idea of having power in the palm of your hand. You could slip a cassette into this little plastic box and take it around with you wherever you went. You're in your own world, really. It's amazing. Sounds ridiculous now.
Really nuts now. It was just like, my God, this is like the Jensen era.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You were actually involved with technology in your first job in the industry because you were a tape op in a studio.
That's right.
And you also did a bit of TV music and you DJed. But I wondered how you got from that to being this fully formed band, Soul to Soul, because obviously the technology and the live thing are completely different things.
Well, yeah, what you have to look at there, you got probably from the time I started in the business, as it were, was probably at least 18 years before I went on to make a record. To release a record, as it were, because, you know, I had lots of other tries during making the acetates and stuff like that for my sound system DJing. And I think that's where the inseparable link is with most of the West Indians coming up during that period of time. I think most producers and anyone involved in music commercially at that time would have probably had something to do with sound systems. And that could be anyone from people like Dennis Bavel, again, somebody who was a big inspiration to me at the time, to your Eddie Grants of this world, you know, all the way through to what came out later on, all the mimicky American stuff, which actually forced me even more to want to be making my own music and not having the old taboo or cliche of just making reggae music, because we already had Steel Pulse and Aswad and bands like that. I really think it was a massive influence with the sound systems, because that way, even what we were trying to do as mediocre musicians, as it were, we now had the aid of technology, which we could then structure within the sound system, i.e., playing your own ideas and ad-libbing live to an actual audience. And then from there, I guess, embellishing with other ideas and for want of a better word, great connections that we were able to. A lot of musicians actually followed my sound system. So you've got everyone from the likes of people like Simon Law, who probably before Soul to Soul, him coming to the sessions, even in terms of what he did as a musician then, he had never thought about going into the studio making his own music, to all the other handful of different producers and people who were around at that time, who all would have probably taken a stab at the game in one way, shape or form.
Yeah, so it was a great enabler, technology in that way.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the sound system, without a doubt, was definitely the platform that enabled me to do exactly what I did. And what's equally as important, it's a sound system that's here in the UK.
Yes, yeah.
Which is something which is really important, because you could also list the millions of sound systems that would have been around anywhere from Jamaica, Canada and the Americas over that period. But what the difference was I think the link between the colonies and the idea of what was happening in terms of what I felt we needed to have our own identity. Because, you know, in England, you were still deemed as an outcast. And even when you went to the Caribbean, you was also an outcast. So you were just trying to find your own way.
Yeah.
And we can't forget, obviously, the conduit to the whole thing in terms of DIY or even being an entrepreneur or whatever, which was punk.
Yeah, yeah.
Because punk came along and had such an impact on the world that anything else that came after that, that was almost like the guide, as it were, so how far it could go. And I mean, fuck me, in England, they have puppets that are number one in the music chart. So,
yeah, yeah.
Hey, you know.
I mean, there's a massive connection between punk and reggae, actually, when you think about a band like The Clash.
I'm even talking about it socially, because the way that would have deemed to be another underclass or whatever,
yeah,
but inherently linked with the whole of Britain, as it were. And that was part of the revolt in regards to what was happening politically and just in that particular time. So for us, as people who were now born and raised in Britain, with all the adversity going on, we can't forget things like that awful thing that Eric Clapton said at one of his concerts, which died off the ANC, I guess, and the whole idea of the anti-league party, where we were also exposed to different musics on those stages as well, which a lot of those gigs that happened, the anti-Nazi league gigs and stuff that happened, some of those I probably would have been DJing with my sound system somewhere in some way, shape or form. So again, here were layers and links towards what was happening, and it really was sort of like a backlash of all the other, you know, the opposite polos of what was going on, particularly in Europe, and the punk came along and just blew a lid in everything.
Yep. To round up, because we're quite short of time today, actually, we're going to play out with Back to Life in a minute or so, but just briefly, that album, Club Classics, I always thought that was a great title, self-fulfilling prophecy, really, because time has proved that it has gone on to be an absolute classic album. It was a very, very positive record.
Mm-hmm.
It was also a huge hit. Did that take you by surprise?
In our own ironic way, we had that much of balls of steel at that time that, yeah, it was we always knew it was going to be a classic. The fact that it was a game changer, I mean, we were oblivious to that, you know. We were just happy it was happening in Finsbury Park and Camden and wherever we grew up, and hit the outskirts of the UK till some of the sound systems were playing our records from Since Fair Play. I think for us it was all done. And then when everything happened in the rest of the world, that was a whole nother chapter.
Yeah. Okay, well, Jazzy B, thank you very much for your time. New
great
Soul to Soul album out in December, Origins, along with some live dates. So the best of luck to you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Thanks for having us, mate.
Back to life, back to reality. Back to life, back to reality.
www.themouthmagazine.com.